All right, Shabbosai, good Shabbos. Good morning. Let's not good Shabbos. You're just telling me the Dvar Torah. That's how I was thinking about Shabbos. All right. Let's begin. So today's daf, we have a beautiful daf ahead of us. Today is Kuf Samech Ches 168. I know you got up to two dots, but for the benefit of our podcast listeners as well, we'll just get in a full blat Gemara. We're going to pick up on Kuf Samech Zayin Amud Beis 167b, specifically five lines up from the bottom. So the Gemara says the following. See, thank you very much. Good morning. Hahu Tavra Davachasim Ali Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba. There was a particular receipt that Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba was signed on. He had signed on to it. So we'll say, remember again, this is going from the Mishnah, the idea that after a woman would go ahead and get her ksuva, be paid for her ksuva, husband would issue a receipt indicating that the ksuva was paid. So a particular woman came to Beis Din to go ahead and claim her ksuva. Now, Beis Din had produced a shover. Beis Din had produced a receipt that had this woman's name on it, and Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba had signed on the shofar. The woman said, listen, I know that person has the same name, but that's not for my ksuva. Meaning, I was never paid for my ksuva, so even though there's another woman with my same name, this document ultimately was not written for me. My husband still owes me the ksuva. Amar ana nami amri lohu lab ihihi. So ultimately, Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba says, you know, when you first walked into Beis Din, I was also pretty convinced that you were not the woman for whom we had signed the shover some time back. Rabbi Yirmiya was saying, you do not look like the woman who we signed the shover for a while back. Take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. When you walked into Beis Din, I had said to the other witnesses, you're not the woman. This is not the woman for whom we signed a shover for. However, Amrali, so after I said, Rabbi Yirmiya, after I said to the witnesses, this is not the lady for whom we signed the shover, the witnesses says, yes, she is. But Amrali, make us shoot the kashala, ubagar lakala, she's aged. Make us shoot the kashala means the years have not been kind, right? The years have been a little bit difficult on this woman. Her voice has deepened. In other words, she's aged. She's aged, so you don't recognize her because however many years ago or whatever amount of time ago that we paid her the ksuba and we signed the shofar, she looked different. Now she's aged. Amar Abaye, Abaye says, Rabosai, so what do we learn from this maisa? Amar Abaye, afagav dam rabanan, Rabosai tap of kuf samiches. So Abaye says, even though we normally say the principle is kevan shehegid, shuv eino chazur magid. Rabosai, even though under normal circumstances we say that once a witness gives testimony, he cannot go ahead and retract, or I should say recant, and give new testimony. In other words, once you've given testimony in Beis Din, then that testimony is locked in. Should you choose to recant, should you choose to retract, we don't listen to you. Za'ai, what about this case over here? So we'll say, this is actually quite interesting. Tosis has a whole problem with this as well, which is, this is not a typical case of Kevan Shigit Shuvin or Chozer Magid, but rather what's happening over here is the following. That Lamaisa, again, Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba said to his fellow witnesses, this is not the woman. So the Gemara says, even though Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba is quote-unquote giving Eidos, and even once he gives Eidos, he can't recant, he can't retract. But because of us, we assume that a Tzurmei Rabbana Talmud Chacham does not take the time to examine the facial features of a woman. Meaning of us is actually quite interesting. Look at the Rashbam, Tzurmei Rabbana, second line. Kigon Rav Yirmiya Bar Abba, Lav Darkei Lameidak Ulahakir Benoshim Kolkach. It was not the derech of a Tzurmei Rabbana Talmud Chacham to go ahead and examine the features of a woman to such great degree. And therefore, again, the initial statement from Yirmiya Bar Abba says, this is not the woman about for whom we had signed the shover, essentially is irrelevant, meaning that this is not considered to be a case of him retracting and recanting. Rather, again, we assume that when she walked into Beis Din, he did not look at her closely, because the Talmud Chacham doesn't look at women closely. So therefore, again, he just didn't recognize her. But now, again, once she's there and he has the opportunity to see her, he recognizes that, in fact, she is the same woman. So the Gemara goes on. Hahu Tavra, we'll say another case. Hahu Tavra, the Havachasim Ali Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba. So we'll say there was another receipt, a receipt for the payment of a ksuva that Rabbi Yirmiya Bar Abba signed on. Amar Lei, Lav Ana Havoy. So same case. The woman comes into Beis Din to collect her ksuva. Beis Din says, but we signed on a shover, we signed on a receipt that you already paid your ksuva. The woman says, it's not me. Meaning, I know that I have the same name as the person written in the shtar, but at the end of the day, that I never got paid for my ksuva. That's not for me. So the Gemara says, Amrle lav anavai. Amrle, Ivra ant havas. So Rabbi Yirmiyahu bar Abba says, yes, it is you. Yes, it is you. So Amr Abaye, says, Afagav, the Tzor Mirabban Alav Orche LeMeidok, even though we just said before, that it's not the normal derech of a Tam Tchokham to examine the features of a woman. Kevan the duck. If he's going to be Medayik, meaning if he's going to examine, then ultimately, again, we trust his visual identification. Take a look at the Rashbam. Afagav, Do Amr Abban, Tzor Mirabban Alav Orche LeMeidok. Even though we just said before, Abba said, that's what? That is not the normal derech of a Talmid Chacham to go ahead and examine closely the facial features of a woman. So the Gemara says, Kigon Rabbi Yirmiyah Shetan Tchila Shelo Ekira Afilu Hachi Kevan De Amar Dikdak Di Yofa Ato Umakira Samchinan Alei. When the Talmud Chacham does say, I went ahead and I recognize this woman, so ultimately we believe him. Actually, saw a beautiful idea that Ben Yoyada brings down. He says that these cases are to be learned in progression. Meaning Rabbi Yirmiyahu realized after the first case that if you're going to sign on a document on behalf of someone, you better be able to recognize them. Because it's possible later on that it's going to be challenged, it's possible later on that they're going to try to collect again. So therefore, again, halacha lemaisa, it is exceptionally important that at the end that you be able to recognize. So in case number one, he didn't recognize the person. Therefore, again, he made sure that when this came up again, that he was able to visually recognize the individual in question. Even though, again, I will say that this is a situation of a woman, and even though, obviously, I want to be clear, I just want to put this out there for the record, it's not just the Talmud Chacham who is not supposed to be well-versed in the features of another woman, right? It's every Jew who is not supposed to be well-versed in the features of another woman. There's one woman whose features you should be well-versed in, and that's your wife. Any other woman, you should not be well-versed in her features. So the Gemara says here, but certainly again, the hallmark of a Talmud Chacham is that a Talmud Chacham certainly does not gaze, does not look at other women. Amr Abaye, so listen to this, how does this end? Amr Abaye, Haitzer Amir Abanan, the Azul Likadushe Isisa, this is actually quite amazing. Sefer Abaye says, if a Talmud Chacham wants to go be Makadish a woman, so he wants to give Kiddushin to a woman, so what should he do? Nidbar Am Ha'aretz Bahadei. He should take an Am Ha'aretz with him. Why? So that this way, at the wedding, you'll invite the Amarats to the wedding also. This way, the Amarats could attest that it's the same woman who he was Makadish, and no one performed the swap over here. Look at the Rashman, I will say, this is amazing. Rashman says, Amarats, Shemistakil Umakir Benoshim. Listen, now you understand, by the way, the profundity of that statement. The Gemara is giving you a definition. What's the definition of an Amarats? See, we always assume that Amarats means someone who doesn't learn a lot of Torah. It's not true, you can learn a lot of Torah. But if you look at women, you're an Am Ha'aretz. You're an Am Ha'aretz. Well, see, this is an incredibly profound yisod. Just as an aside, this is exceptionally important. Because Lemais, again, one of the greatest nisyonos we have in our generation is histaklus. Is looking at things that we should not be looking on. Especially, again, this is not like an anti-technology rant. But again, especially with the internet and everything, and we live in a very sexualized society, one has to be very careful. One has to be careful, we'll say, even with socialization. Right? Socializing with women, socializing even couples. One has to be careful that socialization takes place within the context of Kiddush and Tara. So people think, Shabbos, Yontif. You know, we'll say sometimes Shabbos and Yontif could be the most dangerous times for socialization for one simple reason, because there's alcohol involved. And a person just has to be exceptionally careful. A person has to set gidarm. You hear about crazy things that happen all of the time. You know, as they say, Ein apetrapus la'arayis. That at the end of the day, if there's one area where all of us are weak in life, it's in areas of morality / immorality. And again, no one should ever think that they're above temptation in any way. See, here you see the Gemara tells us that what's an Am Ha'aretz? An Am Ha'aretz is someone who goes ahead and looks at women. That's an Am Ha'aretz. You can learn, you can know Shas, Gan Shas, Talmud, Yerushalmi, backwards and forwards. The person looks at other women besides his wife, then unfortunately, again, that's a definition of an Am Ha'aretz. Nevertheless, the Gemara is saying, since there are already Am Ha'aretzim, so the Talmud Chacham at least should utilize it to his benefit. And if he's going to go be Makadish a woman, he should just take the Am Ha'aretz with him, so at least somebody at the wedding will be able to say, yeah, that's the Kala. Now, listen, I want to be clear. I'm sure Yehuda covered this yesterday. But to be clear, remember, Gemara is not condoning this practice of the Talmud Chacham in this case over here. Remember again, remember our Kiddushin days. And our Kiddushin days, remember the Gemara says that as much as you can be Makadishim with a Shaliach, remember what did the Gemara say? Mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucho. That there's dafka mitzvah to be Makadishim in yourself. Why? 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 You should see her. Don't be such a tzaddik. Don't be such a tzaddik, right? Don't say, oh, I'm only interested in their midos. Don't be just interested in their midos. Meaning, again, a physical attraction is exceptionally important within a marriage. Therefore, a man has to be able to see his wife, his kala, before he marries her. The emergency came out of Metzias over here. That sometimes the Metzias was such that the Talmud Chacham may not have paid such attention to the actual looks and to the physical parts of the Isha. Therefore, he should take the Amma Aretz with him because he'll surely pay attention. And he'll be able to go ahead and ultimately, again, identify this woman for the Talmud Chacham. Good. Says the Gemara. We'll say, now we go back there. Habal Nosi Yitzchar. Remember, again, the Mishnah went ahead and discussed, our Mishnah discussed, about when you need all parties present to go ahead and write a shtar, when you don't need all parties present, but then specifically the Mishnah focused on who pays for the shtar. Who pays the shtar? Well, so this is a very important yisod. You had a sofer, you had expenses, you had costs. Who pays for the shtar? So the Gemara says, v'haba nosein schar. Remember again, the halacha is that a husband has to pay for the get. So the Gemara says, my time, well, what's the reason? Amakra, because the pasuk says, v'kasav inasan, because the pasuk says that the husband will write, the husband will give the get. So essentially, the Torah puts all of the responsibility for the writing and delivery on the get on the husband, and therefore the husband has to pay the sofer. We'll say, but the Gemara says something amazing. V'ha'idna, dolav dinan hachi. So we'll say, this is actually amazing. Now, this is not our practice. Now, we'll say, now, the truth is, now, this is our practice. Meaning, today, a husband pays for the get. A husband pays for the get. So, apparently, what the Gemara is reflecting over here is, there was a particular point in time where the minag was, or the halacha was, that the woman paid for the get. If you look at the Rashbam, right across, the Rashbam says, Va'inu d'lav dinan hachi, elonagu sha'isha nosen eschar. Now that we have the wife pay for the get, we'll say, why is that? Shaju rabbanan eisha ki eichi d'lo lishiei. This is amazing. Chazal went ahead and told the wife, you pay for the get. Why should you pay for the get? In order to expedite the process. Because I will say, one of the ways in which the husband could drag his feet, ultimately, again, regarding the get process, is to delay payment of the sofer. Therefore, in order to avoid this, the Chazal said to the woman, you pay for the get. Delo nishei, Rashbam says, b'shulascharshin arota litin umis utvitis agin. In order to avoid aguna problems, Chazal said to the wife, you pay for the get. So I will say, now again, at what point in time this kind of switched back, I'm not exactly sure. But Lamaisa, again, you see that there was a period, even though the Mishnah Paskins, the husband pays for it, nevertheless, we see a subsequent Tikkunas Chazal, the wife should pay for it, in order to avoid Aguna issues. Kos vin shtar lelo ve'afa pi shen mal ve'imo. Baruch atu Adonai, Eloheinu melech olam shakol nia b'dvaro. Amen. So remember, the Mishnah said, you write a shtar, you could write a loan document for the borrower, even though the lender is not with him, and it is the borrower who pays for the shtar. Now, we'll say, now the automatic assumption, just in terms of figuring out who pays for the shtar, the general assumption is whoever is the primary beneficiary of the transaction, the transactional beneficiary, whoever gets the greatest amount of benefits from the particular transaction in question, generally is the one who pays for the shtar. So, for example, if there's a borrower and a lender, you have a loan document, so it is going to be the borrower who pays for the shtar, because the assumption is that he is the beneficiary of the transaction. So Pshita, the Gemara says, of course he's going to pay for it. Lo tzricha be'iska, to which the Gemara says, no. Let's say you're talking about an iska situation. We'll say, remember again, what's an iska situation? Rashbam says, ma'os l'machtzis schar. So remember, an iska situation, we'll say, is where I lend money to someone, but ultimately we agree to split the profits. Meaning, Reuven is borrowing money from me for the purpose of investing in a business. We're going to split the proceeds from the investment. So I might have thought in that case, I, the lender, am a beneficiary as well. So perhaps either I should pay for the shtar, or perhaps I should split the cost of the shtar. Kamash Malon, no. that the borrower is still considered to be the primary beneficiary, and therefore he pays for the document. Remember, again, the Mishnah says, we write a shtar for a seller, even though the purchaser is not with him, but it is the purchaser ultimately who pays for the shtar. So the Peshitta, the Gemara says, that's obvious, because again, we assume that the purchaser is the primary beneficiary of the transaction, to which the Gemara says, no. But we're talking about a case where the seller is selling his field mipnei rasa. Mipnei rasa means that this is a deficient field. Look at the Rashi Rav, which is mipnei rasa. Mum gadol sheba, or rechokam, and either there's something wrong with the field, or it's very far away from the rest of the holdings of the seller. V'sakadayt chamina yitein huschar, tahano adidehu. And I would have thought the havamina is that since the seller has a vested interest in moving this asset, therefore, again, he should have to pay for the shtar, at least pay some part of the shtar. Kamash malon, no. Kamash malon will say that we still see the purchaser as the primary beneficiary, and therefore it is the purchaser who pays for the field. And kosvin shtare irisin. So remember, again, we say that you do not write shtare irisin without the presence of the chassan and the kala, but yet again it is the chassan who pays for the writing of the shtar, to which the Gemara says pshita. The boss said the assumption over here, again, it is the husband. It's interesting that the automatic assumption is the greater hano of this transaction, quote unquote, is for the husband. It is the husband ultimately who is receiving a wife, and therefore ultimately he should pay for the shtar. It's obvious. Lo tzricha, boss, listen to this. It's lo tzricha. It's necessary to teach the following case. So we'll say, even in a case where, let's say, the chassan is a Talmud Chacham, and again, every father wants to marry his daughter off to a Talmud Chacham, so I would have thought that in this case, again, it is the Kala's family who is the true beneficiary of this union, because the Kala father-in-law is getting a Talmud Chacham as a son-in-law, and therefore perhaps he should be the one who should have to pay for the shtar. Kamash malo no. Kamash malo rabo said that it is the chassan who is considered to be the primary transactional beneficiary, and therefore he pays for the shtar. Weiter. Ein kosin shtar arisus v'kablonos. So I will say again, remember, the Mishnah spoke about again that you need the presence of both parties in order to write a sharecropping document, and who pays for the cost of the document? The sharecropper. The sharecropper. So the Gemara says pshita. Again, I will say, once you know the principle that whoever is the primary transactional beneficiary is the one who pays for the document, then all of these cases become somewhat obvious. So obviously the sharecropper is going to pay for the document because he is the primary transactional beneficiary. So why does Mishnah have to tell me that he has to pay for the document, which the Gemara says, lo tzricha bebora. We'll say, what's the case of bora? Look at the Rashbam. Shetzarech lahovira shana ushnasayim ve'in revach atla makabel. We'll say, the case over here is where, you know, sometimes you have to leave fields fallow for a particular amount of time. So let's say the first year of the sharecropping arrangement, the field was going to have to lay fallow. In that case, I would have said the sharecropper is not the primary transactional beneficiary. Kamashmo, even in that case, he's still considered to be the primary beneficiary, and therefore he has to pay for the shtar. Weiter, in kos fin shtari beirurin, elamidashnehem, you can only write shtari beirurin, right, with the consent of both parties, to which the Gemara asks, my shtari beirurin. They will say, what is a shtar beirurin? What is this? Hocha targimo, shtari ta'anosa. So we'll say here, in Bavel, they define this as shtari ta'anosa. We'll say, what are shtari ta'anosa? Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Shtari ta'anosa, shnei sofre hadayonin, hayu kosvin tainas an shehariv, kidei shlo yuhu tanin v'chozrin v'tonin. Va'api osantanos poskin hadayon es dinam. So say, you know what this sounds like? This is like the court record, the stenographer. So when people would come to give edus in Beis Din, you'd have the stenographer recording their edus. They both say, why do you want somebody recording their edus? So first of all, because if somebody changes their story, you want to be able to know that. You also need it, dayonin need a court record in order to be able to chazer over the testimonies, in order to be able to render their decision. So both say, it costs money. It costs money to have the court stenographer. So therefore, again, the Gemara says that both of them have to pay shared costs in the stenographer. So the Gemara says, that's the first opinion as to what shtari beirurin is. Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba Amar, ze bor lo echad, ve ze bor lo echad. Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba says, Rabbo say, what it refers to is the following. Shtari beirurin, Rabbo say, is like this. When two people had to go to Beis Din, so this is assuming there's not a Beis Din kavua. if there's not an established Beis Din in town, so what would often happen is each of the parties to the dispute would have the right to choose a dayon, right? So Reuven chooses his dayon, Shimon chooses his dayon, and then those two dayonim together choose a third. That process was committed to writing. They wrote down this process, and that's called shtare berin. So we'll say some machlokes. The shtare berin ultimately mean the record of the court proceedings, the record of the eidos of the litigants, or does it mean the record of each of them choosing their dayon? Either way, this is the type of document. Rabbi Osei, both of them have to share the costs. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer L'Shneim Kosvin Shneim L'Zeh Ba'atol L'Zeh Ba'atol. Rabbi Osei, listen to this. So the Tanakhama, the first opinion in the Mishnah said, we write one Shtare Berurin, meaning we write one document. Let's go with the first approach. One document that contains the testimonies of each of these individuals. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that if the litigants say they each want their own document, then Kosvin Shneim Zeh Ba'atol Zeh Ba'atol. If each of them want their own document, in other words, Reuven says, I want my testimony contained in my own, I don't want my testimony with yours. I want my testimony in my own document. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that we allow them to write two different documents. So the Gemara says, so what's the machlokes? So we'll say there's a machlokes in Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that when we record the testimonies, we record testimonies in what? In what? One document. And even if the parties say, no, we want two documents, we do not listen to the parties. We only write one document. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, if one of the parties involved wants his own document, we give him his own document. So what are they arguing about? Lema bikofen amidas stom kameth. This is quite amazing. Perhaps they are arguing about whether or not we could compel someone regarding Midas Sodom. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at the Rashbam. It's about 8 lines up from before it gets wide. Lema bekofen al Midas Sodom kameflegi. So says Rashbam. Midas Sodom kidis. Now, what's Midas Sodom? Homer shali, shali, shalach, shalach, zel mida benonis. Rabbosa, if a person says, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, so the Mishnah identifies this as a mida benonis. Right? Amir al Abdullah, not a tzaddik, not a rasha. The Yeshomim Zomidas Dom. And some say, no, Rabbi say, this is in fact Midas Sodom. Lema Tanakam, Rabbi say, Midas Sodom, Rabbi say, that term refers to people who refuse to do good for the other, even when what? That good doesn't cost me anything. Whereas Rabbi say, to not do good for the other because it's going to cost me, that's certainly not good, but I understand it. Not everybody's willing to spend money. Not everybody's willing to be Mahana the other with their own funds, fine. But to do good for someone, to refuse to do good for someone, when it doesn't cost you anything, then we'll say, that's just mean-spirited. We call that Midas Sodom. So watch this. Lema Tanakama Savar, Shnehem Nostin Schar, V'Nostin Shtar Echar Ben Shnehem. So the Tanakhama calls Rabbi say that under normal circumstances, when people come to Beis Din and they go ahead and what? They have to write a Shtar Berurin. Both of their testimonies are contained within one document. And both of them share the cost of that document. So watch this. Tanakhama Shavar, Shteim Nosin Schar, they both therefore contribute to the cost of the document. V'Nosin Shtar Echad Bein Shnehem. And there's one document for both of them. Vim Yomar Echel Mehem Lo Etein Aschar, Ki Ani Chofit Sheheli Shtar Echel Levadi, Ule Shtar Ech Acher, Via Shali Shali, Vishaloch Lashaloch, Kofin Oso Vosin Echot, Kimash Amar Midas Stomhi, Reb Shimon Gamliel Savar In Kofin. So perhaps the Machlokes is the following. The Tanakhama says, I don't understand, under normal circumstances, what's supposed to happen. Both of their claims are supposed to be recorded in one document. And if one of the litigants says, no, I'm not contributing towards that document, I want my own document, and you should get your own document. So the Tanakhama says, you know what we call that? We call that Midas Dom. And you know what? When it comes to Midas Dom, we don't listen to you. Kofin al Midas Dom. We force a person not to be a sodomite. Right? And therefore, again, we will force you to participate ultimately, again, in this joint shear. It's not joint shear. This joint shtar. This joint shtar. And therefore, again, we're not going to listen to you. Rather, you have to participate in the joint shtar. So the Tanakhama holds Kofin al Midas Dom. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no, in Kofin al Midas Dom. Here, the guy's a jerk. For some reason, he wants his own shtar. But Lamaisa, if somebody wants to be, Ben Sodom, so Lamaisa, at the end of the day, we're not going to force him not to. It's a free country. Everybody can do what they want. And therefore, again, he could get his own shtar. Yes, by him getting his own shtar, what does he do? He necessitates the other getting his own shtar as well. But we don't force a person not to be a Ben Sodom. To which the Gemara says, To which the Gemara says, fine. Lo, the Choli Alma Kofin, Kofin. So Gemara says, no, that's not true. In fact, again, Lamaisa, we're Kofin on Midas. Let's say, when we see someone acting like a member of Sdom, right, we force people to behave appropriately. Let's say, this, of course, is something that we lack in today's organized, or I should say, disorganized community. When the Gemara talks about Kofin on Midas Sdom, they have organized communities with batei din, with strength, with teeth. So Beis, when they saw someone acting inappropriately, had a mechanism to be Kofin on Midas Sdom. If you were behaving like a Sodomite. So Lamais, again, like a Midas, like a Ben's Dome. So Lamais, we have the ability to be Kofa Midas Dome. To which the Gemara says, what's Machlokis over here? V'hacha hainu taima, the Rav Shimon Gamliel, the Amar Lei, lo neche lei de tehevis chusech gabis chusi, de domis alai ki arye arva. So let's listen to this. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, because when one of the parties involved wants his own shtar, that's not Midas Dome. We'll say there's a good reason. Let's say Reuven and Shimon come to Beis Din. They're having a disagreement. So under normal circumstances, what happens? We record both of their claims in one shtar. Suddenly Reuven says, I don't want one shtar, I want my own shtar. I want my claim to be in one shtar. I want your claim to be in a different shtar. Why? Because it will say court records, so sometimes, or very often court records, were public record. So what happens? So Reuven says, Shimon, I don't want you having access to my written testimony. You know why? Because you are like a crouching lion. Right? It's very apropos to this past week's parasha. Right? I don't want you having access to my records because you're going to try to deconstruct my statements. And therefore, again, I'm happy with the court to have access to my records, but if our claims are recorded in the same shtar, then you're going to have access to my records by virtue of the fact that what? You have access to your records. Therefore, what I prefer is for our testimonies to be recorded in two different shtaros. Therefore, again, you don't have access to mine. Take a look at the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, the dumbest alai ka'arye arva, kol shor shetirak sav, tavo alai ba'alilos tanosech haksuvimbo, v'sham tira tanosai, novo lidei meriva, ki ish merivos ato. So Reuven says to Shimon, you are a contentious personality. He will say, ki ish merivos ato. Reuven will say, sometimes when you tell people that they're a fighter, they take it as a compliment. Very often it's not a compliment. Right? If you're a fighter, for certain causes, that's a compliment. But there are some people, Rebbe say, who are fighters for every cause. And they always like to just fight. That's not a compliment. That is a horrible midah. So Reuven says to Shimon, Ish merivos ato. You're a fighter. You're a contentious malcontent. I do not want you having access to my written testimony because you're going to deconstruct it and you're going to constantly enter into machlokus. So the shaila ultimately is, does Reuven have the right, therefore, to order two different shtaros or not? Tanakama says no. Tanakama says Beis Din has a process, and the process is that the testimonies are recorded within one written document. Rav Shimon Gamliel says no. If I am constrained about ongoing machlokes, I have the ability to go ahead. I, as one of the litigants, have the ability to order two different documents. But Rabosai, both the Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel will both agree that what? Kofin Amidas Stone. That when someone acts in an unreasonable manner, in a totally unreasonable manner, and I will say in a matter where a person's taking a stand that is to someone else's detriment and the person gains absolutely nothing from that, so I will say even in those circumstances, everyone will agree that kofin al midas sdom. Fine. So we'll say it happens to be we don't pass like Rav Shimon Gamliel in this case, we pass it against Rav Shimon Gamliel in this case, and at the end of the day, the halacha is, that we go ahead and we do not order two different documents. Rather, all testimonies are recorded in one document. Says the Mishnah. We'll say new Mishnah. Misha Parah, this is really a fascinating case. Misha Parah makes a schovo. V'hishas es hashtar v'amar lo. So listen to this case. I borrowed $10,000 from Reuven. So it turns out, I paid back $5,000 of it. I will say, so the Rashbam points out over here, I don't really want to go through the process of writing a shover. So here's the concern. The document says, I, Shmuel Silver, borrowed $10,000 from Reuven. I now paid him back half. We have a problem. On one hand, I don't want that document sitting in Reuven's hands. Why? because that argument says I owe Reuven $10,000. But I don't owe Reuven $10,000. I only owe him $5,000. On the flip side, we're both a shtickle cheap, so neither of us really want to go ahead and pay for a sofer to draft the receipt for the $5,000. So we have come to a good compromise. Let's give the shtar to Shimon. Let Shimon hold on to the shtar, and therefore again, Shimon will know that I already paid back $5,000. But he shouldn't release the document to Reuven until I pay back the other $5,000. But I make the following tonight. V'amar lo, im lo nasati locha mikan v'ad yom ploni, tein lo shtaro. So we'll say, so what do I say? I say, Reuven, here, I say to Shimon actually, Shimon, if I don't pay off the remainder of the debt, the remaining $5,000 to Reuven in the next 30 days, give Reuven back the shtar. Rabbi will say, now what happens if Shimon gives Reuven back the shtar? What happens? Shimon now has the ability to go ahead and, Reuven has the ability, he now holds the shtar that says that I own $10,000. Rabbi will say, it's another way of saying, I'm saying to Shimon, if I don't pay the remainder of the debt in 30 days, give the document back to Reuven, and I agree to once again repay Reuven the whole $10,000. In other words, what I'm saying over here is that if I go ahead and I don't pay back within 30 days, I agree to pay Reuven essentially a premium of $5,000, an additional $5,000 above and beyond the original value. I will say, what about ribis? Right? What about interest? It's not a problem. Why? Because essentially, what I'm saying, implicit in my statement was what I'm saying is, if I don't pay the remainder of the debt within 30 days, that first payment of $5,000 should be considered what? A matana, a gift, and I still owe him the full $10,000 of the note. So we'll say, so listen to this. Higia zman velo nasan. Higia hazman, right? Higia hazman. So we'll say, so we again, you don't have to finish mission. We always know how these stories end, right? The best intentions. So 30 days elapsed, I still have not paid the remaining $5,000. So we'll say, now the shaila is what? Shimon, the one who's holding the note, what should Shimon do? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yitain. Rabbi Yossi says, Shimon, listen, a deal is a deal. You should give back the note to Reuven. And now Reuven has the right to collect $10,000 from me. Rabbi Huda Omer, Yilo Yitain. Rabbi Huda says, no, Shimon, you should not return the note to Reuven. Rather, you should continue to hold it. So we'll say, so what's happening over here? Says the Gemara B'mai Kamiflige. So we'll say, what is the nature of the machlokas? Rabbi Yossi Savar, Asmachta kanya, Rabbi Huda Savar Asmachta lo kanya. Rabosai, here we go. The fundamental machlokes, Rabosai, is what do we do with an asmachta? What's an asmachta? Take a look at the Rashbam. Asmachta, second wide line, the widest lines. Hamaftiach lechavero davar, amenas sheyase davar laasid, v'sumich beliba b'shas hatnai, sheyucha lekayim hadavar kishyagi azman. What's an asmachta? Essentially, an asmachta is an exaggerated promise that you never really think you're going to have to carry through on because you're confident in your ability to fulfill the tenai. So again, what's an asmachta? An asmachta is our Mishnah. I owe Reuven $10,000. I paid him $5,000. I say to the holder of the shtar, Shimon, in 30 days, if I'm not back, give him back to the shtar. What am I thinking? I am able to make this ridiculously exaggerated promise because I'm uber confident in my abilities to go ahead and pay off the remainder of the loan within the allotted time. Which Rabbi say, now there's a caveat to this. I'm so confident that what? I don't really believe in what I'm saying. In other words, do I have deep down an intent to pay him the full $10,000 if I don't deliver after 30 days? And the answer is no. Why? Because I'm totally confident in my ability to pay off the remainder of this debt within the allotted time. So we'll say, not only is it an exaggerated promise, but it's an exaggerated promise in which I, the promiser, that's the right word, the promiser, the person who made the promise, I have absolutely no intention of carrying through on this. Not because I'm lying, but because I have no intentions of allowing the situation, the transactional reality, to getting to this point where this tonight is actually Davar Shabali Olam. So I'm willing to, we'll say, this is my Simbachol Yom. People make exaggerated claims or exaggerated promises that they have no intention on delivering on. Not because I'm lying, but because I'm never going to allow the situation to get to that point. I'm never going to allow the non-payment to get to 30 days. So I'll say, so the shaila is shkayach. But now 30 days elapsed. and I didn't pay off the remainder of the debt. So what's the status of an asmachta? And we'll say, what is the status of an exaggerated promise that I never really had intention to carry through on because I assumed I would fulfill the details of tonight before that asmachta came about? So now if I didn't, is asmachta kanya? Is asmachta binding or not? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi savra asmachta kanya. Rabbi Yossi says, yes. He'll say, you know what? What, dvarim shebalev inam dvarim. Whatever you think, I don't care what you're thinking. What do we care about? We care about what you say and what you do. You made a tonight, and the tonight is, I promised that if I don't pay off the remainder of the debt in 30 days, Shimon, give back the note to Reuven, and I now owe Reuven the full amount of the $10,000 value of the note. Rabbi Huda Savar, Rabbi Yossi says, Asmachta Kanya, Rabbi Huda Savar, Asmachta Lo Kanya. Rabbi Yehuda says that an exaggerated promise of Bosai is not kona. When we know, Rabbi, now how you know when something is an asmachta or not is a different discussion, which we'll actually touch on a little bit later. But the idea is if something is clearly an exaggerated promise, Rabbi, so if something is clearly out of the norm, if I've paid $5,000, to say that if I don't go ahead and pay 30 days later, that I'm going to be chayiv, the first $5,000 is a gift, and I'm going to be 5 minutes, that's ridiculous. That's clearly an exaggerated promise. Rabbi Huda therefore says, it's not kona. So we'll say, what would happen in this case over here? We would tell Shimon, hold on to the note. Beis would tell me, silver, you're still chayiv the other $5,000. Make a payment plan, pay off the $5,000. Amrav Nachman, Amrav Baravua, Amrav, Halacha Krabi Yossi. So we'll say, Rav Nachman, Sidna Rav Baravua, that's the name of Rav. That the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Once he had Rabbi Yossi paskin, Rabbi Yossi said, "Asmachta kanya." So ki asa lekamed Rabbi Ami Amar lehu. V'chime achas Rabbi Yochanan melamdenu pam rishon pam shnei halacha Rabbi Yossi. Mani asa. So I say, what should I do? So said Rabbi Baravua. You know, we've learned one times, two times. We learned so many times that the halacha follows Rabbi Yossi. That asmachta kanya. So what should we do? And once how does the Gemara end? The Gemara says, "Ve'ein halacha Rabbi Yossi." I don't care how many times you learned. Rabbi say, we paskin asmachta lo kanya. Asmachta lo kanya, that Rabbi say, an exaggerated promise. Exaggerated promise, ultimately, again, is not a binding promise. Rabbi say, Jesse, you should know, this ties in to another very important yisod, which is, Rabbi say, the Gemara says that the Masachik Bekuvya, Someone who is a gambler. So first of all, besides that, he doesn't have a chilek in Olam Haba, which we're not going to discuss today. He's pasul le'edus, right? A gambler is pasul le'edus. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because the Gemara says he's like a gazlan. He's like a thief. Why is he like a thief? Rabbi Osai, because the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara says that when people gamble, and everybody puts their money in the pot, right? Everybody puts their money in the pot. So Rabbi Osai, so no one assumes that what? No one assumes that they're going to lose. I was about to say, even someone who says, oh, I don't play to win, everybody plays to win, right? In fact, it's sad if you don't play to win. Everybody plays to win, right? So therefore, again, I will say, what happens when everybody puts their money in the pot, and let's say I go and I win, shkoyach that I won, except what the Gemara says, it's gezel. Why is it gezel? Because I'm taking all of that money against their will. But Reuven and Shimon and Levi, Yehuda, the guy and some of them is putting their money in the middle of the pot. They're clearly relinquishing it willingly, to which the Gemara says it's an asmachta. They say they're putting their money in the pot and they're ready to lose, but what? They're not ready to lose. And I will say, we paskin asmachta lo kanya. We paskin that when someone makes an exaggerated promise or an exaggerated statement that we know they don't really hold by, that ultimately, again, it does not create a binding reality. Therefore, it turns out that when I am the gambler and I win and I end up taking money from other people, in fact, that is tantamount to an act of theft. That is tantamount to an act of gezel, and therefore I give them a sachik bekuvi is going to be posulated. It's incredible.
The conditions have to be in place, exaggerated promise, and no kavana that you're going to, no intention to follow through.
So correct. Meaning the idea is, as Yachim was bringing up, the more complicated piece is now how you define an asmachta. In other words, but yes, the answer is technically yes, whereas clearly an exaggerated promise. Now, the automatic assumption is when you're making exaggerated tanoim, the assumption is that your intention is you're never going to have to follow through on this. That's your default intention. What constitutes an asmachta, we'll say, is a more involved discussion. Says the Mishnah. We'll say again, this just gets better and better. I don't know what to say. Mishnah Nimchak Shtar Chovo. We'll say, listen to this. Somebody comes to Beis Din, and these are really interesting cases. And we'll say, it's so interesting. You know, we live in such a different age where, you know, if you have a document that's important to you, so what do you do? Right? You back it up. Right? We have everything backed up. So it's amazing to think that, you know, once upon a time, things weren't backed up. Right? Meaning, once upon a time, you had a document, and it was, you had to guard that document with for dear life. And if you didn't guard that document, mom was like, you had nothing. So you're talking about situations where people could lend incredible amounts of money, and all you had was mamish, a piece of parchment. That's what you had. So listen to this. Someone shows up. I show up in Beis Din. Misha nimchak shtar chovo. So as I show up in Beis Din, what happens? I have a shtar, but my shtar was erased. How does that happen? Look at the Rashbam. We'll say third line from the bottom. Misha nimchak shtar chovo. Me'atzmo shenishtar shtesh o shenafal of mayim. We'll say what happens. The kids, it's always the kids, right? What happens? They're having a water fight, and they're right in my office, right by my shtar. And I will say, what happens? Water gets on the shtar, and the print now becomes smudged. Something happens. So, mamish, Ashov and Beis Din, I lent Reuven $10,000. All I have is this piece of parchment. The kids had their water fight. I love them. I still love them. But mamish, right? So, I said, so what do I do? So, ma'amid, I love Edim. So we'll say, so what happens? Essentially, I need to go ahead and gather the Edom. I need to go ahead and get the Edom. The Rashbam says, Ma'amid alav Edom. Hayodim me'ema say nichtav. So I have to get the Edom who know when ultimately, again, the shtar was written. They know when the shtar was written. Uma kasubo, them osin lo kiyom befnei bezin, the kosvin lo, masha haya kasubo osa shtar vazman vamos. So we'll say, so the simple answer is, it's okay, I just have to get the Edom. And hopefully the Edom remember what they went ahead and they signed on. They remember the date of the transaction. They remember ultimately, again, the amount of money in the transaction. And again, halacha lemaisa, they remember everything. So therefore, again, what we do is we reconstruct the shtar in front of Beis Din. Look at that. Go back to the Gemara. What's the Kiyum Abba say? Ish ploni ben ploni nimchak shtar biyom ploni. And they write in the document the following. So-and-so, the son of so-and-so, his document, right? His document was erased biyom ploni. Abba say again, nimchak biyom shtar biyom ploni u'plomid Beis. U'ploni edav. So Abba say, essentially what we do is we reconstruct the shtar. We'll say, you know, we have a similar shtar today, where we have a ksuva di irkisa. You know, if you have a situation where a couple loses their ksuva, it happens. We'll say it's actually very important. You should always know where your ksuva is, and more importantly, your wife should always know where her ksuva is, right? So nice, again, if for some reason a ksuva is lost, a couple is not permitted to live together if they do not have a ksuva. So we have a text called the ksuva di irkisa. Right, it's not that we don't have like an. It's like this is not the one you put on your wall if you want to hang up your ksuva. There's an interesting discussion about putting a ksuva on a wall in general. But lemaisa, so this document essentially says that this couple did get married and the edim were so and so and it happened on so and so days. The Gemara just says if you have a document and your document got lost, or for this matter over here in this case, I'm actually showing up with a document, but the document is smudged, the document is erased. The Gemara says not a problem. Get the edim. And with the aid of the Eidim, we will reconstruct that same document in Beis Din.
What if you don't remember who the
Eidim were? Better take up the night shift at 7-Eleven. I don't know, whatever you have to do, you're not getting your money. Says the Gemara, Tan Rabbanan, Eizu Kiyumo. So we'll say, so what's the text? What's the text of this type of Kiyumo? We'll say, what's interesting over here is you're going to see this type of document actually can be quite powerful. Because not only is Beis Din going to reconstruct it, but if the Edom are there, Beis Din could actually certify it as well. So this could be essentially like a shtar and a asharta, a henpik, a shtar and the kiyum shtaros all in one. So when I start about an ezer kiyumo, so we'll say, what's the kiyum? So meaning, what's the text of this type of kiyum? Bemosav tlas sahavina. So we'll say, in the presence of three judges, we the following, anu ploni, uploni, uploni, hotzia. So we'll say, in the presence of the three of us represent the Beis Din. In the presence of ploni, ploni, uploni, hotzi, ploni, ben ploni, shtar mochok lifaneinu. So-and-so, ploni, ben ploni, produced an erased shtar in our presence. Beyond ploni. And he brought this shtar before us on so-and-so date. Uploni, uploni, edav. And so were the witnesses. So we'll say, so watch this. Im kasubo, hus kaknu le edusan shal edim, vinimtsas edusan mechuvenes. So we'll say, so if the document then says, We heard the testimony of the witnesses. We verified the testimony of the witnesses. The name says Edusan Mechuvenes. And it turns out that what? That their testimony was correct. Gova. They both say essentially they're able to reconstruct the shtar. Ve'in tzarach lahavi raya. They both say, now what does it mean, ve'in tzarach lahavi raya? Meaning, Beisdin reconstructs the shtar and simultaneously does what? Upholds, certifies the shtar as well. Therefore, no further kiyum is needed for this shtar, and this shtar becomes a bona fide vehicle of collection. Ve'in, lav. Rabbi said, if for some reason Beis Din was unable to go ahead and certify the document, then tzarach lahabirai. So we'll say, what the Gemara is pointing out over here is the following, and we'll get into this more. What the Gemara is suggesting, Rabbi says, that sometimes Beis Din could reconstruct information based on the testimony of people, but yet Beis Din cannot go ahead and necessarily attest to the veracity of the information. I was about to say, if somebody shows up in Beis Din and they says, I lost my document, Beis Din could reconstruct it, but we'll see under certain circumstances, if Beis Din is able to certify the testimony of the witnesses to a degree that they feel fully confident that the shtar is not only valid, but they could certify it, and they could certify the shtar as well. Other times, all they can do is certify what is being told to them, but they can't necessarily put their shtempel on the shtar itself. So the shtar will still require an additional level of certification. So the Gemara says, well, say, take a look at the Rashbam for just a moment. Im kasavo is kaknu. Look at the Rashbam. Sha'amdu elu bezen ha-mekaymin. V'chakru edim ha-chasuin bo. Lohayra ha-chasimasan. V'nimsa divrein mechuvanin. Gova mizman rishon ha-kasav b'shtar. V'in tzarech raya acheres. So Bosai, the idea is, remember, the power of the shtar, Bosai, is the date of the shtar, of course, is the date in which it's come before Beis Din. But the real date of the shtar is on Bosai. Remember, if I am the holder of the shtar, what I want, what date do I need in the shtar? The original date of the transaction. Why, Bosai? Because the encumbrance generated by the shtar is as of the date of the original shtar. So if Beis Din is able to go ahead and ascertain that indeed this is a valid shtar, they can actually include the original transactional date, thereby certifying the original encumbrance. However, again, ve'imlav, but in some reason Beis Din is not able to certify this document in the fullest degree, we'll discuss why. Tzarech lahavi raya acheres al hazman va'al sikum ha'mos. So we'll say, otherwise, if Beis Din cannot go ahead and certify this, then the Baal HaShtar will have to find some other mechanism for upholding this shtar. Likra, the Baal say, watch this. If the shtar was torn, puzzle. Niskara, kasha. So we'll say, look at the difference in these lashonos. Nikra, the Rashbam says, is al yidei adam. If the shtar was clearly torn by someone, then the shtar ultimately again will be puzzle. Niskara, however, if the shtar was torn by itself, meaning by itself means by accident, the Rashi says, bless you. When you say by accident, the shtar will be kosher. We're going to define what this means in just a moment. Nimchak o nishtashtesh. We'll say if the shtar was erased, or nishtashtesh, we'll say means it was smudged. Im rishumo nikar kosher. Say if the original print is still recognizable and the shtar is kosher. So we'll say, let's go back in this braisa. Hechi dami nikra. So we'll say, remember again, what did the Braisa say? If the shtar nikra was torn by a person, then the shtar is pasul. Niskara, if the shtar was torn by itself, then it's kosher. So it says the Gemara Shkaya. How do I know the difference between a shtar that was torn by a person or a shtar that was torn by itself? To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda, nikra kara shel Beis Din. Niskara kara shel Beis Din. We'll say Rav Yehuda says, nikra means that the shtar was torn. What does it mean it was torn by someone? It was torn by Beis Din. Niskara means it wasn't torn by Beis Din. Hechi dami kara shel Beis Din. How can you tell if a document was torn by Beis Din? Amar Rav Yehuda, listen to this. Makom edim, umakom hazman, umakom ha-torah. Rabbi say, when would Beis Din tear a document? When would they tear a document? When it's already been fulfilled. Or as Rabbi say, Beis Din, if they know that a document has, let's say a loan has already been paid, Beis Din will tear the document in order to ensure that the document cannot be used for collection again. But when Beis Din tears, they tear in very specific places, namely the place where the witness is signed, the date, and the Torah. For both, I remember again, the Torah is the toface and the Torah. The toface is the boilerplate. Is a general generic information. The Torah is where you have the name of the parties, the amounts of the money. So if you see a document, Rabbi Osei, torn in these specific places, the witness's signatures, the date, and the Torah, then what? They will say that is clearly an intentional tear. That was done by Beis Din. That was done by Beis Din in order to invalidate the shtar. So if you see a shtar like that, then you know that the shtar is pasul. On the other hand, again, if you see a shtar, we'll say that just as what? Stam rift. But the rift seems to be a bit more haphazard. Then again, we'll say it's just possible it's an accident, and the shtar could still be kosher. Abaye says, Shasi va'arev. Abaye says, Rabbi say that when Beis Din would go ahead and tear a document, they would tear it, Shasi, Rabbi say, Shasi means crisscross, right? Length and width. They would dafka tear it in a way where across, right? I guess maybe across the, either it means like an X, Shasi va'arev, or it can mean across the length and across the width. The idea being that they do it in a way that looks like a premeditated tear. Fine, so let's listen to this case. Hano arvoi, the asula pumpadisa. There were these Arabs who came to Pumpadisa, Dahavu Ka'anse Ar Asa de Inshi. And Abu said these Arabs were forcibly taking land from Jews, from people. Asubo says, so what happens? Asa, this is actually very interesting. Asul Marusaihu the Kameh Dabai. So the owners of the land came before Abai and they said the following: Amarle, Lechse Mar Shtare, Belichtov Lan Mar Shtare Achraino Ale. So they came to another interesting request. Abai, look. We come here with the deeds to our land. We purchased this land. We bought this land. It belongs to us. We're asking you the following. Examine the shtar. If you believe that we are indeed the bona fide owners of the land, then what we're going to ask of you is do the following. Write for us another document of ownership. This way what? This way, when the Arabs come and take our land, we will... See, I will say the problem was, when the Arabs took the land, they didn't just take the land, but they were smart. What did they do? We'll say everyone knows. That if you want to go ahead and delegitimize someone's claim to land, what do? You take away their historical claim. Oh, sounds a bit familiar. Right? If you want to go ahead and delegitimize someone's claim, let's say, just to take someone's land is not enough. You have to say that the others never owned it, right? You have to say that someone else owned it earlier. So the Arabs, Ein chadash tachas hashemesh. There is nothing new in humanity. You think Chevron is the first time that someone tries to take something from a Jew by claiming that they don't historically own it? Do you think this is a new thing? They were doing it in Pumpadisa also. So we'll say, so again, what the Arabs were doing was a very incredible thing. They took the shtaros. They didn't just take the land. They took the shtaros also. So these landowners come to Abayah and say, we have a problem. If they take our shtar, so we'll say, but here's the problem. If somebody takes your land and they take your shtar, what's your recourse? Almost nothing. Look, you could bring Eidos. You could bring Eidos to what the Arab did. You could, but Lamaisa, again, that Eidos, meaning if the Arab is strong enough to take your land and strong enough ultimately, again, to take your shtar, the Pashas is not going to be any Eidos that undermines his abilities either. So what do you need? What you need is a shtar that backs up your ownership so that when everything calms down a little bit, you'll be able to reclaim your land. So they come to Abai with a great chav, Abaye. You see we own it. Write for us a second shtar of ownership. Abaye says, this way, if the Arab takes one shtar, we'll take the other shtar in our hands. Abaye says, I'm sorry, I can't help you. Rav Safra said, you can't write two documents of ownership on the same parcel of land. Why? Dilma Tarif. We'll say, this is amazing. Because the Sarfa was concerned about time. We'll say, watch this. This is mamish amazing. I come to Abai. I say, Abai, listen, the Arabs are about to take my land. Do me a favor. Write for me another document of ownership. Abai say, I can't do it. I'll tell you why. Because we'll say, Bipashos, let's assume I bought this land from someone. So we'll say, when I have a document that says that I buy land from someone, that doesn't just solidify my ownership. What else does it do? In the event that the person, we'll call the Reuven sold it to me. If one of Reuven's creditors comes along and what? Seizes the land from me. And both say, what do I have the ability to do? I have the ability to go back to Reuven and now seize land from Reuven or seize land from someone else who Reuven sold to after the date of my transaction to make myself whole. And both say, what's the danger, therefore, of having two documents of ownership? That you could go ahead and potentially seize land from others, either from Reuven or from people he sold to after the date of my transaction illegally. So Rav Safra said, you cannot write two documents of ownership on any one piece of land, because it could potentially allow the owner of the land to illegally seize land either from the person he purchased it from or from someone else who bought land subsequently from the same person I purchased from. Difference is, if I am so sorry, I can't help you. I can't write the document. So I'll say, listen to this. Habukatar delay. So Randy Abbas says, so it's rumored that Jews sometimes can be a little bit tenacious, right? So it's right. So what happens? So they won't let them go. I will say, understandably, so all kidding aside, they have the potential to lose their holdings. So they're not going to let a buyer off the hook. You have to write the documents for us. So we'll say, Abaye, now again, what the circumstances around this are, I don't know. But Abaye feels that for whatever reason, he cannot reason with them. They are being unreasonable. And they're not stopping. So we'll say, so what is Abaye to do? He can't write the document, but apparently he feels he has to do something. So Amalei the Safrei, Abaye says to his scribe, Zil Kasav Lehu Al Hamachok Ve'edav Al Aniyar. So we'll say, what does Abaye do? Abaye needs to just give them something. So he says to his sofer, okay, write for them a document that claims ownership, but here's what I want you to do. Write for them on an erased piece of parchment, but sign the witnesses on a non-erased piece of parchment. I will say that we're bekeim in this already. What's the halacha if you write a document on an erased, the text of the document is on the erased piece of parchment, and the witnesses sign on an unerased piece of parchment? I will say, what's the status? It's possible. Why? Because that is an easily forgeable document. How so? You can ultimately, again, erase the signatures, right, and go in and write more and sign afterwards. So essentially what Abaye says, now you're going to see what the Havamin is over here, but essentially what Abaye seems to be saying to the sofer is, write a document, erase it, write on it again, and sign the witnesses on that. And therefore, again, give them their document. They're not going to know the difference. Get them off my back. But at least I am not in violation of Rav Safra's ruling. Rav Acha Bar Ben Yumi says to Abaye, but one second. Maybe the original text of that first document is going to still be, so we'll say the Havamina is, that what Abaye was telling the Sofer was, write the document, write the full document, erase it, and rewrite it again. So Rav Acha Bar Ben Yumi says to Abaye, but one second, maybe the Rishum, the print of the first document is still going to be visible. And we just learned about that, what Rav said. If you have a document that's been erased or that's been smudged, in Mishumo Nikr Kusher, if the original print is visible, then what? The document is kosher. So Rabbi Osai, if that original print or some rosh of that original print is still visible, then you're going to have, Rabbi Osai, what? A document written on an original piece of parchment with signatures on an original piece of parchment, and the document, in fact, will be good. Amar le mi kamina shtara ma'alya alif beiz ba'alma kamina. Sabai says, no. Do you think I instructed the sofer to write a real first shtar and then erase it? No. What I meant to do is just write some aleph beis on it, erase that, make the parchment an erased parchment, sign the witnesses on that, and ultimately, write the shtar on that, sign the witnesses on the unerased piece of parchment, the shtar will be possible, but at least ultimately it will get them off my back. So Mosai, we'll stop over here for today. We will continue Amir Tzah Hashem tomorrow with the other mechanisms available. The other mechanisms available in the event that a person went ahead and lost the shtar, or a person went ahead and ultimately, again, had the shtar erased, or a person has to reconstruct the shtar in base. Thank you.